it's time to ask the sinus-infected pastor professor. The new name of this program. Since I'm still in a complaining mode from Numbers chapter 11 and 12, I thought I'd just go ahead and complain about it. 505-785-1-800-730-2727. Our guest in this hour of conversation is Dr. Bob Weiss, professor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, battling a sinus infection. Is that right, doctor?
Yeah, and woke up with a little bit of throat issue, you know, it kind of comes with it. Otherwise, just trying to rest a little bit, and thanks to Diane for calling me.
So you're not going to be worse after spending an hour talking to me, are you?
I don't think so, not if you're still complaining about Numbers 11. I don't know, that sounds like some sort of a gambling thing.
Well, we just went through the complaining chapter there in Numbers 11, and it just stimulated some complaining. What better to complain about than a sinus infection? Do you feel like chiming in here? You want to complain?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I have to. Today I almost did the absent-minded stuff today, so thanks to Diane, I'm back here, so no problem.
All righty. Well, our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 for those of you who would like to call in and complain. Today is your day. Or if you want to offer something positive to the program, we certainly welcome that also. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A story in the London Times here a few days ago. Well, actually, it was close to the beginning of the month. But the story says dolphins have long been recognized as among the most intelligent of animals, but many researchers had placed them below chimps. Dolphins now have been declared the world's second most intelligent creatures after humans, with scientists suggesting they are so bright that they should be treated as, quote, non-human persons, unquote. Studies into dolphin behavior have highlighted how similar their communications are to those of humans, and that they are brighter than chimpanzees. These have been backed up by anatomical research showing that dolphin brains have many key features associated with high intelligence. The researchers argue that their work shows it is morally unacceptable to keep such intelligent animals in amusement parks, or to kill them for food or by accident when fishing. Some 300,000 whales, dolphins, and porpoises die in this way each year. So, Dr. Weiss, what do you think? Do you think we should begin to think of as dolphins, maybe certainly not as humans, but as something higher than the rest of the animal kingdom?
Well, there's two things that I might be able to add a footnote to. A non-human person is kind of an oxymoron. If you're a person...
Don't let that get in the way.
Well, you have to be human. The second thing is, according to the evolutionary time scale, in terms of from whence did these dolphins come, they actually supposedly came from cows that give milk. There's a video out on the history of dolphin evolution.
Dolphins came from cows? Is that what you just
said? Well, yeah. See, what happens is this. If people go to Blockbuster or whatever they want to do and rent this movie that Robin Williams is in, and it's about dolphins and how smart they are, it shows him pushing from the backside a cow, a Holstein, the white ones with black spots or the black one with white spots, however you see it, into the ocean. And supposedly, because you know, they're mammals, they're born live, and so that's supposedly where some people think they came from. I think if they're smarter than chimpanzees, then we have to see if they eat bananas. That's one thing we should do. And then the other thing is this also, I guess, fourthly, is the fourth point. This actually is not trivia. There is a fellow by the name of Peter Singer, whom I know has been discussed on your radio on AM 850. He's a professor at Princeton University. He's a philosopher, very powerful man in the area of beginning end-of-life issues. He's very pro-abortion. He's the one that says that if you have a child that's born with Downs or some other child born with some other disability, then you just let the child set aside and let it die. because it's not contributing anything to society. Nothing is lost. Well, in pursuit of this, he has decided with some of his colleagues to initiate what's called the Great Ape Project, where they are already, and they have done this in France, elevated old world monkeys, the chimpanzee, the orangutan, gorillas, and so forth, the ones without the tails, up to person status. So in that context, this makes a lot of sense if they're saying that dolphins are much smarter than gorillas, and now we're going to add them to the non-human personhood situation and start to give them rights and privileges that basically humans have. I don't know if they can pay taxes, but if we start removing them from zoos so people can see them, like at the St. Louis Zoo and other places, eventually the trickle-down effect will occur, and you'll see this with other animals, especially elephants. Elephants are supposed to be very smart as well.
So, obviously, we have a contrast emerging here. There is there's something in the news today, and I can't remember which three states, but in three states here in our country, something called personhood has, I don't know if it's on a ballot or it's going to be decided or it's going to be addressed, but anyway, there is movement on that front as well. Of course, personhood there means extending an understanding of humanity to unborn children. Now, I'm going to guess that you're in favor of that. Would that be correct?
Yeah. The thing with personhood tends to always be, at least in for all of our listeners and myself and you, it tends to be an issue of philosophy. That is to say, the Latin word when you talk about person tends to mean mask. You know, people see the happy smiley face mask. And we have a couple of CTCR documents out there that deal with beginning of life issues like abortion and stem cell research, and they don't use the word person because of the political baggage that comes with it. Because person, at least politically, based on Roe v. Wade, says that since the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence only address person or personhood within the context of, how we say it, adults, then you can't give the same privilege to those in the womb because they're quote unquote not adults. So this whole personhood movement that has literally exploded into at least what I'm understanding, 32 states are seeking this, based on all of the issues that have happened politically in terms of the current government being very much in support of abortion, and that certainly is documented. That's not an opinion. They certainly have done that. I think we can see the pro-life organizations moving towards establishing person or personhood, saying that the fetus is person within the language and the meaning of the 14th Amendment, which says it's not. And so person means it's conscious aware, it's consciously aware of its surroundings, and of course Roe v. Wade said it isn't, it can't be. So therefore you can't claim the same rights as a newborn or an infant.
Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. I'd like to return to this conversation here, but this is Ask the Pastor, so if you call, we'll get you on the air. Let's talk with Donald. Hi, Donald. You're on the Bible study.
I apologize for interrupting.
No, it's never an interruption. Go ahead.
Go for it, Donald.
Okay. In the commercial for the new Lutheran Study Bible, it says it's made up of scholars from 20 different Lutheran organizations. If we're all preaching Christ crucified, why are we split into 20 different groups and we're all Lutherans?
very good question.
We'll talk about it. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, I think what we're doing here is, and I haven't looked and studied that new one. I haven't actually purchased it. I still have the self-study Bible, the Bible that studies itself, the NIV. And they had said the same thing about this Bible. Well, I mean, different Lutheran churches, and I don't know, I'd have to look at who the scholars are, and I always encourage the students, when they see names, find out who these people are, what church they belong to, our denomination, let's put it that way. And that will tell you an awful lot about their quote-unquote roots and what they believe, teach, and confess. There are certainly conservative Christian Lutherans who believe, who are very pro-life, who believe that Scripture is inspired and profitable for teaching, rebuking, and education, instruction stuff, and don't belong to the Missouri Synod. That I know for a fact. Well, then some people say, well, then why do they belong to churches that at least their major teachings support homosexuality and, let's say, abortion? That's something we'd have to ask them. I can't speak for them. So I think across the board, and I don't know why they've included all of this, and I don't know why the language was put in there. That would have to be addressed by the people who published it, and certainly CPH, somebody from their organization could answer this much better than I. But different denominations, in terms of Lutheran, I suspect that this is probably published in the book. I would imagine it is. I know we have some from the Synod here, from both seminaries that have contributed to this. And some of the comments that are made in the lower part of the readings, much like the Concordia Self-Study Bible, are marked as basically Lutheran input into this. So you have their view of the Lord's Supper as the real presence and not some sort of symbol. So I basically would encourage maybe contact CPH. I'm not trying to skirt the issue, but it's hard to answer for somebody else on this one.
And I'm quite sure they'd be happy to answer any questions about the New Lutheran Study Bible, because, first of all, they're very proud of it, and secondly, it has been very well received so far.
Yes,
so
it has. I have a lot of students that use it already.
Call CPH and ask them, put that question to them. I think they'd probably be very happy to respond to that. Here's another caller at 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Hi, Ms. Harris. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. My question is about abortion. I've been trying to figure out why all the emphasis is placed mostly on the woman when it comes to abortion. And I was thinking maybe it's because when they filed that Roe versus Wade, it was a woman that initiated it or something. But my question is, why don't the men take some responsibility for abortions as well as women? Because it takes two to make a baby. A woman can't make a baby by herself. Well, you can now, you know, if you get the artificial, you know, insemination. They have women making babies with other women now. But I don't understand why all the emphasis is placed on the woman and the man has no responsibility toward these
all
abortions.
Right, let's talk about it. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Dr. Weiss?
Well, yeah, actually that's always been a rather perplexing issue for me as well, and for all people who are very pro-life, because the embryo itself, as we well know, is composed of the genetics between the man and the woman. And in fact, the genetics between the man and the woman on the outer surface of the embryo communicate to each other to make the placenta, the bag of waters, and the umbilical cord. So the man is not, can't just sit back and lazy boy and say, I had nothing to do with this. But I think this is all part of, when this goes back into the 1910s, 20s, 30s, and so forth, where women were singled out historically in terms of, and I'm going to use a phrase that is not politically appropriate anymore. I don't agree with the phrase. They should remain barefoot and pregnant and stay at home. And so there was always this look down on women until we got into the Americanization of equal rights for women, voting, even in Lutheran churches, women's suffrage where they could vote, so that it always has been viewed as this is a woman's issue. And when Roe v. Wade came up, and actually was started in 68, when Norma McCarvey brought this up, and this went to the decision in 73 in January, it was all about her. It was all about the child in the womb. It had nothing to do with the man, because this is has to do with the woman. You know, this is her body. This is her property. And the man is kind of off in the weeds because men can't become pregnant. And so the history behind it, I disagree with the way it's put, because when I talk about abortion, I always talk about the man and the woman. You can't disassociate them, but unfortunately, the law does, and that's where we are. And so we have to continue to witness and say, you know, what about the man? I know pastors and teachers, deaconesses who are involved with this, you know, we always have to say, well, where is the man that is involved with this? And it's not just an unmarried woman who has committed this sin in terms of fornication, but even adultery with men that are married, and another woman becomes pregnant. They can kind of walk away because the law says you can walk away. But God's word says, no, you can't walk away.
Could it be that there is another perspective here worth exploration, and that is, if you're going to hold the man responsible, and Ms. Harris seemed to be chafing under the notion that it's the woman is the only one here who bears the burden of the responsibility of the outcome, the pregnancy. If you're going to hold the man responsible, then you invite the man into the equation. It would be difficult, it seems to me, to hold him responsible but not give him any say. And if you give him say and he says, no, wait a minute, you want an abortion? No, I want this child. I will be responsible for the child. I will take care of the child. But activists and feminists don't want men to have that say. So doesn't that facilitate the woman going it alone?
Yeah, in fact, that's a good point to bring up. The reason they don't want men in there comes down to, now this will probably irritate some people, I suppose. There are two basic views of feminism in society. Whenever you stick this ism on the end of a name, you're talking about a way of life, an ideology. And one is labeled power-based feminist, and one is labeled care-based feminist. Now, the care-based feminists, as far as I have learned, tend to be, across the board, very pro-life. They care about what's in the womb. Even Atheists for Life and the Gay and Lesbian Movement for Life, because unless they say somebody can convince me it's not a human, don't try and tell me I should support abortion. So care-based feminists tend to be, at least as I have learned, pro-life. The power-based feminists that you're talking about, Chuck, are the ones, you're exactly right. They don't want the men in the picture. Anything that has to deal with men, they don't like, because they're, as they would say, to put it in the vernacular, they're going to muck up the picture, and they don't want them to have a say in this, because the minute they give them a say in this, then the woman's choice to have the abortion is in conflict with the man, and they don't want the conflict. They just simply want to say, this is my choice, this is for health reasons, which is defined on the same day as Roe v. Wade in a case called Doe v. Bolton, same day, January 22 in 1973. And health, of course, is defined as anything, and this is what we've heard, anything between the doctor and the woman in terms of what they believe is healthy for them. It could be a shin splint, it could be anxiety, it could be financial issues. It's a very subjective use of the term health. It certainly isn't the medical term for health. So you are correct. By inviting men in, then this could compromise the final decision of a woman.
Now let's go back to the personhood thing, because I think we can almost connect all these things we've been talking about together to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
We have a debate going on in our culture right now.
Yes.
About the personhood of the unborn child.
Yes.
And there is movement in state houses, in legislative fronts, to extend personhood to unborn children, which in those states, if personhood comes to include the unborn, could have important effects on the practice of abortion. Can you explain to me, Dr. Weiss, how it is that we have figured out that an unborn child, at least that's the way it is now, is not worthy of personhood, but a dolphin that might get caught up in a fishing net somewhere is worthy of personhood?
Yeah, there actually is one word for this. I talk about this
in... A few come to mind for me, but I'll let you go ahead.
What'd you say?
I said a few words come to mind to me, but I'll let you go ahead and pick yours.
The word I'm talking about is called biocentrism.
Biocentrism,
yeah. And it's a word that says all life is equal, and since all life is equal, we should give everybody their due season. That is to say, the dolphin and the human are on the same plane. But ultimately what they mean when you study this phrase, biocentrism, meaning this, the centrality of life, all life is central, is that animal life, which, according to Darwin, we're part of, really, we're below them. They mean more. In other words, the world can do without us, but can't do without them, like the dolphins and other things. And because they have intrinsic value, they have a will to live like we do. And since we decide who lives and who dies based on the misinterpretation of Genesis 1, 26, having dominion, and they interpret it domination. Therefore, the dolphin and old world monkeys are viewed from our perspective as on the same plane, but yet higher, because we're not treating them very well. This is a sort of a PETA issue, and they are becoming extinct, so we need to deal with that and elevate them above our humanity, because the world can't live without them, but it can live without us. So that's the phrase that right now is being bandied around to excuse this whole issue of bringing person or personhood to non-humans, as they call them, a non-human person. I think we all have to understand that this is incredibly oxymoronic. You can't be a non-human and yet be a person, or vice versa.
Well, would a biocentrist then, by definition, be opposed to human abortion?
A biocentrist would have no problem with human abortion, simply because they don't see us as valuable to life, but they see the pulp. I mean, this is where you get into all of this stuff. Issue of polar bears. You know, they say polar bears are, you know, their life is in jeopardy. They're becoming extinct. And that's not true. They're on the increase.
So let me see if I understand this. So if I go to the restaurant and have a 9-ounce sirloin there, that they would be opposed to that because some cow somewhere had to die for me to do that. But if a coyote kills a deer over there on my farm in Edwardsville and has a feast, that's okay?
Well, in some cases, it would depend on your survival. Now, they would say it would be okay, and Albert Schweitzer is a big proponent of this years ago, it would be okay to go ahead and eat, you know, because you need to survive, you're part of the animal kingdom, and that's good, but don't start tapping into these animals and these plants that could become extinct. We don't want you to do that. So you're going to be limited eventually over time as to what you can and cannot eat. So that when you get into this whole issue, and this gets into respect for nature, there are books out on this. For example...
What about lettuce? Is there personhood for lettuce?
Yeah.
I got to interrupt you here, Doctor. I got to go read Romans on depravity, and then we'll resume on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
Okay, sounds good.
Essence of Thursday afternoon on KFUO Radio. Join me for Christian music and conversations with Becky Shaw of Light of Christ Chinese Mission at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Olivet. Dr. Stephanie Van Olft, our psychiatrist friend from St. Mary's Hospital in Centralia, joins us. And Dr. Scott Seidler of Concordia Lutheran Church in Kirkwood lends us some thoughts. I'm Diane Summers. I hope you'll sample some of the essence from 1 to 4 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
It's a nod to Valentine's Day that trees offer us their own sweet treats during the month of February. Or is it? Well, nature's Valentine takes the form of sugar maple sap, which flows for about 6 weeks from mid-January to the end of February. The annual Rockwoods Maple Sugar Festival is Saturday, February 6th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., free and open for the whole family. It takes place at the Department of Conservation's Rockwoods Reservation in Wildwood, 2751 Glencoe Road off Highway 109. Visitors are encouraged to dress for cold weather.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Ontario, Canada is closing a record number of schools because of their low birth rate, and abortion is at the heart of the problem. People for Education, an education advocacy organization, says well over 300 Ontario schools face closure during the next 3 years because their enrollment is declining. Even the increase in population due to Canada's substantial immigration doesn't offset this decline. Blame can be placed in large part on abortion. Many of Ontario's citizens are being killed in the womb. Every child not given the right to life is one less student in a school. Collectively, abortion is having an adverse effect not only on education. Ontario's experiencing an aging society with fewer young tax-paying individuals compared to an increasing number of senior citizens.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
A call for action. I'm Norman Hall with Religion Roundup. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is calling on Congress to finish health care reform. The bishops have sent a letter to lawmakers saying health care reform remains a critical need. Kathy Saley is the Director of Domestic Social Development for the Conference of Catholic Bishops.
We still have millions of people without insurance, and it's still a moral imperative, and it's still a national priority.
The bishops are calling for more bipartisanship, and they would like to make certain the legislation doesn't ease restrictions on abortions. In Nashville, recording artist Michael W. Smith has pulled together a children's choir and an all-star lineup of artists to record a benefit song. Proceeds will go to Haitian earthquake relief.
You're seeing the good side of the people of this country, and especially right here in Nashville, who are just going, you know what, let's roll up our sleeves, and this is not just a 1 week or a month deal. This is going to be going on for a long, long time.
With Religion Roundup, I'm Norman Hall.
A revolution rampages outside while a family huddles inside.
When is the fighting going to end?
I don't know, sir.
Sounds like they're getting closer.
Tonight, the life of Jack and his family will change forever.
Please, the Baron.
Please don't take him, please.
Lightlighter Theater presents The Unexpected Return on the next Lightlighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer for Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine. Coming up this weekend, how parenting has changed in one generation, removing spiritual obstacles from your life, and explaining puberty to a young boy. That's all coming up this weekend on Weekend Magazine.
Saturday mornings at 10 on KFUO Radio.
You're listening to the Bible Study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. I'm Chuck Rathert. Dr. Bob Weiss is with us here today, frequent guest here on our radio station and professor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis with a big, long title that has to do with bioethics, which means he should be in a position to help us understand this, oxymoronic is a good word, push to declare dolphins as non-human persons, which I don't know if that would mean that they would get some kind of protection under the Constitution of the United States or not. And then, but we can't seem to extend that same benefit to unborn children. People are working on it, and we pray that they're successful so that in this country we will stop killing unborn children.
Yeah,
but dolphins apparently we care about, and unborn children, well, not so much. We're trying to understand that. So you're going to explain that all to me, Doctor?
Well, We've been working on that. I just want to kind of, like, maybe this, if I was thinking about, I just jotted down four, I guess you might say, points, bullet points that people who are in biocentrism, that is, everything in nature has value and equal. There's a book out called Respect for Nature. I think it's by Peter Taylor that addresses this issue. It's a pretty easy read for people. But this is really where things are going in terms of the dolphins. Taylor, as I recall, you know, obviously human beings and animals are on the same plane, you know, because they share the earth and they should live equally and harmoniously together. That's one of his first, that's kind of the basis and foundation for what he gets at, another biocentrist. But and humans and other animal species, which he puts all of us in there together, we're interdependent. And so he rejects this view that humans need animals, or that animals depend on humans. And then that takes him over into these general statements that every living creature, you know, is different, it's unique, it lives in its own way for its own good. And then this implies that one species cannot know more about what is good for another species than that species itself. So we can't know any more what's good for the dolphin than a dolphin can know what's good for us. And so at the end, he would reject the argument that human beings are inherently superior to animals. We're not. And therefore, the dolphin should be given this non-human person status in terms of how things go. So this inherent value, try to control, change natural ecosystems, you know, I mean, it's this is what they put into practice. And I suspect if you do this, these ideas, and this goes back to what you said earlier, they do oppose hunting, fishing, and would call for vegetarianism. So all of this stuff, if this helps explain to our listeners what's going on with this non-human person business, is really kind of where it goes. And this is kind of what they're pushing. And I think all we have to know is to look and see how we view animals in our society. We have all these horses and cats and dogs that were left from Katrina and now, of course, in Haiti, and people are looking for adopting them. And it is kind of bizarre that the minute you start talking about hunting and killing animals for food and for sustenance, even the polar bear that some northern Eskimos have to use for eating, you can't do that because they have intrinsic value. And they really are more important than humans, according to a biocentrist.
To me, this just flows directly out of Romans chapter 1, where it says, beginning in verse 22, claiming to be wise, and that I would characterize these scientists who have said that dolphins should be treated as non-human persons, claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. And then follow three, God gave them ups. Therefore God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity. For this reason God gave them up to dishonorable passions. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. And because God has given up the ones claiming to be wise, this is what you get. Scientists mm-hmm. who can figure out that a dolphin ought to be a person, but an unborn child is not.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, there it is.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, we always go back to the our foundation, that which we build on, and that is the Word. And, of course, this irritates so many people. Even the so-called Christian who is pro-abortion, as you know, this pro-choice word is ridiculous. And they say that, hey, look, it's okay to kill 4,000 babies a day, but don't touch other animals for food, clothing, and shelter, because we can't do that, because eventually they will become extinct. Well, all they have to do is to read some of C.S. Lewis's book, especially The Abolition of Man, where we have, as he says, some men controlling other men using nature until we have the abolition of man. And that is, in fact, what's going on here with the abortion issue. There's a website that, and perhaps you are aware of this, certainly with the question of these 32 states who are looking into this personhood. There, it's a website called Personhood USA.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go there. Founder was, I think his name is Keith Mason. And this is what they're trying to push. It's a website that lists all the states that are involved in the personhood movement. And it allows people who want to register with these groups in their respective states to get information on this. And they explain it, they talk about it. And as I have said, we here at Concordia Seminary, at least the teachers, the professors, we're into resource. And this is a pretty decent resource because common sense would just say, and they even talk about the dolphins, scientists say dolphins. They get into that thing here too. So you can't avoid all of these issues that they get into. And it would be good for your listeners to take a look at this because they talk about chimeras and hybrids and Planned Parenthood and all of this kind of stuff. And it's pretty well done.
If you go to personhoodusa.com, you will find an article on this question we're talking about today, dolphins being treated, according to some scientists, as non-human persons. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Let's take a telephone call here. We have a caller who's been quite patiently waiting. Hi, Phil. You're on the Bible study.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, Bill.
How do we answer, or do we answer at all, when people ask us, Christian and non-Christian, why does God allow these things? Where is he at when children are killed, or when children are raped or murdered, or when people get cancer? Because just a family at our church, you know, some of the people that don't attend was wondering why their mother got cancer. And I mean, do we attempt to say that you know, we live in a sinful world, this is what we chose, or do we just say we really don't know? I mean, how do we give someone comfort? What do we say to them?
All right, we'll talk about it. Thank you, Phil.
All right.
Dr. Weiss?
Yeah, I think the last thing that Phil brought up is how do we give them comfort is the most important part. I think it gives false hope to say, oh, yeah, I know why God did this. We don't know why God allows these things to happen. We do know that in some cases there are certainly consequences for the sins that people find themselves in. If someone is, for example, a man lying with another man and he contracts AIDS, we know that there's a consequence for that sin. And he certainly allowed that to happen. Well, why didn't God stop this? Why didn't he stop Haiti? Why didn't he stop the tsunami? Why doesn't he stop abortion? Why does he allow that? And Phil is right. There is not an answer that I can lay out and say, well, you go to here to Romans 1 or 1 Corinthians 6 or 10. I do know there is, you know, the suffering that all people go through in these issues. I do know that in 1 Peter, and I'd encourage Phil, take a look at 1 Peter 1, 3 to 9, where he talks about, though you suffer now for a little while, you may have had to suffer grief and all kinds of trials. These have come so that your faith of greater worth than gold, which perishes, even though refined by fire, may be proved genuine and may result in the praise, honor, and glory when Jesus Christ is revealed. And this ends up, you know, this is to the salvation of your soul. This isn't a cop-out, but the hope we have is to know that even when these abortions occur or these tragedies that happen in Haiti and the tsunami and whatever it might be, the loss of a death of a wish for a baby, we know God is not absent, but God is there. And God in Christ brings hope and comfort to know that he still remains the way, the truth, and the life, refuge and strength in a very present time of trouble, that we cast our anxieties to him. He cares for us. I mean, this is where I think also Romans 5 fits in. So I can't say, well, I know why God allows this, but I do know that in Christ there is hope, and we Christians are to plant the seed into water, just like Paul did on Mars Hill. When he was talking to the Stoics and the Epicureans, and they heard about this Christ, and they said, hey, come on down here to the Areopagus, the God of Thunder place. And then he spoke to them about the unknown God, and except that he says, let me tell you about the God I know. And that's what we have to do.
Dr. Weiss, I'll tell you how I like to answer that question sometimes, and you have to be careful doing this, but I wonder if you would evaluate it for me, tell me whether you think this is a good or a bad tactic. And if it's a lousy tactic, feel free to say so. But if somebody puts that question to me, I like to turn it back around and say, why are you letting these bad things happen to these people? And they usually look at me with some incredulity and say, well, what do you mean? I'm not God. And I say, well, you think you are. And they usually say, well, no, I don't. Well, that's crazy. What are you talking about? And I'll say, well, no, actually you do. Because God has made his will very clear in his word. You don't have to work very hard to find out what God's will is for you and for the world if you look in his word. But you and I, we think we're God. And we say, did God say that you shall not steal? But we steal. Did God say you shall not murder? But we murder. And they say, well, I don't steal, I don't murder. And I say, well, you know, now you need to look at Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Because pretty much Jesus says right there, even if you hate your brother, you're guilty of murder. Or if you look at a woman lustfully, you've committed adultery. Even though we know what God's will is, we do our own thing because we put ourselves above God. And that's what Adam and Eve did, and that's why the world is in the mess it is now, and we're still behaving like they did. What do you think of that tactic?
Yeah, I mean, what you're doing is pointing back to original sin and the result that this sin has brought to the world in terms of corruption, not just of our body and soul, but all living things that are on the face of the earth and in heaven above, that these things that are occurring, I mean, are certainly, the Lord said there'd be rumors of wars, there'd be famines, devastation, all these things would be happening, and he certainly allows these things to happen, and they certainly do come because we live in a corrupted world.
Bob, we think we're so godly, we think we're so divine, that we're in a position to say, oh God, do you think you made man in your own image? No, 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 no. Dolphins. Now that is a high form of evolutionary existence. Unborn children? Eh. All right, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Jim, you're on the Bible study.
Hello, yeah. Ruth Graham, Billy Graham's daughter, was on a show. I think it was one of the news shows. And they asked her the same question. Well, why does God allow this and why does God allow that? And I thought she gave a pretty good answer. Whenever we lock God out of our, when we lock God out of our government, when we kill 4,000 to 5,000 babies a day, when we allow homosexuals to marry, when we do all this here and say, God, we don't want you in our business, in our daily business. We don't want you telling us what to do. But he just steps back and lets it happen. And I think God, as a person that has feelings in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, you can go throughout all the Old Testament. God says, I've called you, and I've called you, talking to his children Israel, and you shrugged your shoulders at me. And they got so bad one time that he told them, he said, even if Samuel and even if Moses would pray for you, I wouldn't hear you because
right.
It's so bad. And I think that's where we are today in the United States.
Let's see what Dr. Weiss has to say. Thanks for the call. Doctor?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, we do. I mean, just back to what Chuck said, our old sinful flesh locks God out, doesn't want to have anything to do with his word and certainly the Ten Commandments that he's given to us for holy living, and let alone the rejection of the gospel that Christ is the resurrection and the life of all of us, and that for all who believe, there is certainly awaiting us the now, not yet, the new heaven and the new earth. I think that all the talking we're doing right now about this is to say we know God allows this, and the callers and you and I have talked about how sin has come into the world, and Satan uses that to tempt us to sin, and of course that does lock God out. And I can't say personally that God sits up in heaven with a big G on his chest and just kind of, you know, willy-nilly lets things go, because God is always present. He's everywhere. and he allows this. And I can't answer that question. We know why things are going on in the world. We know that sin is everywhere, and Satan is roaming about seeking whom he may devour. And I think it's a good point he brought up. We do allow these things to happen, and in fact, we give them praise because, as you said, Chuck, the greatest idol there is self. That's pretty obvious. Perhaps that's why.
I don't think that's obvious, Bob. I think if you talk about idols, if you talk about really powerful idols, you know, people are going to start talking about Zeus and I don't know, Baal and all, but themselves not going to come to mind.
But you just said that the greatest person we worship is ourselves.
Well, that's what I said, yeah, but
yeah.
I don't think it's obvious.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
I think that point has to be made and restated, because when you say to somebody, well, you know, the problem here is that you think you're God, they're not going to think that's obvious. They're going to go, no, I don't think that.
Well, but they do. I think we all suffer from what I call the Fonzie complex. Henry Winkler.
The Fonzie complex.
I mean, he really loved himself.
Oh, yeah.
He ran the whole show there.
Hey.
You know, he had to go into his office. I won't say where that was. You know, he'd look in the mirror and bring his comb up to his hair, but he would never comb it because he loved what he saw.
He was perfect.
He was perfect. And we take a look at ourselves, and that is the sinful flesh does, and says, hey, I'm perfect. I need to strive more and do more for me and more for... And so you look at yourself, and it's all about me. And I heard this on one of the other radio stations about how, you know, the me generation, which has not gone away, in spite of people becoming part of the thumb generation with computers and iPhones and cell phones and so forth. But we do love ourselves. Why else do we have the two greatest commandments? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Obviously, as you have said and pointed out well, actually, Adam and Eve loved themselves. You know, they disobeyed God.
I think there's a better question here. Rather than the question of why does God allow these bad things to happen to people, I think the more germane question, it comes from God to us. Hey, how's that God thing working out for you there now that you're trying to run all the stuff? And it's not working out very well.
No, it doesn't. In fact, we keep mucking it up. I mean, as the last caller said, look at the Bible. Every time man tried to control or take control of God, that is, to usurp his power, at least they thought they were. And, of course, one of the greatest, I mean, back to Adam and Eve, you got the tower and city of Babel. That's, you know, first issue of Clicks, you know, look what happened to them. And why isn't God intervening when he sees this today? I personally see a lot of this as windows for the Holy Spirit for all of us to go through, like you were talking when you talk to people, is to plant the seed and to water it. And frequently that means the law and not the gospel. When somebody is stiff-necked, as it says in the Old Testament, we can't just say, oh, well, don't worry about it. It'll all come about. You know, you'll get it one of these days. No, their very salvation is in jeopardy. And that's why I've always believed when people tell me they're pro-abortion, I certainly question, to be quite honest. And they say, but I'm a Christian, or I'm a practicing homosexual, but I'm a Christian. I doubt that, to be quite frank. If one is practicing sin and locking God out, I certainly would question that they are living the life of Christ in this world.
Let's get another call in here, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Dennis, you're on the Bible study. Dennis, are you there?
Dennis.
Sometimes they put the phone down while we're yakking, and then since we're on a bit of a delay here, then they hear their names called, so I like to wait and give them a chance to pick the phone up. Dennis, are you there? All right, Dennis seems to have moved on. Let's talk with James. Hi, James. Can you be brief?
Sure, I can be brief. Pastor Weiss, in Genesis chapter 1, verses 20 through 22, is God ascribing some intrinsic value to the animals when he saw it was good and he blessed them? And if it's intrinsic value that he's ascribing to him, is the creator being biocentric, just stated. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, James. Good question.
Yeah, I can't say that he's biocentric because the word tov, good, is about the character of God. Because he says that whenever, you know, he creates all the animals on day six, and this is what you're talking about, you know, God created all these, and he said this was very good. The word tov, as I've understood it from the Hebrew gurus, this is about his character. And as it says, as you point out, God saw that it was good. He clearly doesn't put man and animals on the same venue in terms of zoology, where we are part of the animal kingdom. That is, we're mammals that have arisen from lower forms of life, because he did not breathe into the animals the breath of life, the Ruach Elohim, as he did to man and woman, and he did not breathe in, and he did not create the animals in his image, as he did when he created in Genesis 1:26 and 27 Adam and Eve. So those are two distinct differences that would not speak to the point that God is biocentric. Clearly, they have intrinsic value within the sense that God created them, and he gave them responsibilities, that is to say, to live in the waters they live in, to live on the lands that they live on, and to eat the food that they had before them, because according to what we're reading here, they were vegetarians certainly before the fall, and not until Noah, as I recall, were humans permitted and said, go ahead and now you can eat these animals. So I think that I don't personally think that this addresses biocentrism, especially when we look at all of creation.
Let's try to squeeze in one more phone call here. Hi, Jan, you're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck. I was thinking about C.S. Lewis's assertion in Mere Christianity that we use certain words to denote certain things, when in point of fact they actually connote something else. For example, he uses the gentleman example, and he goes through this explanation to explain why Christian behavior is sometimes affixed to Christians to determine whether or not they're Christians. So I think it's more correct to say that one is a bad Christian when he or she does not follow Christ than to actually judge and say that person is or is not a Christian.
All right.
And I'm looking at the Book of Concord. It's slow going.
We got less than a minute here.
Yeah, one of your callers asked why there are so many different Lutheran denominations. And we all assert that we believe the exposition of the Bible in the Book of Concord, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So, might be just geography, huh?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, I think. But I think we got your point. Any final comments, Doctor?
No, I think that, once again, back to the use of words, George Orwell is a good one to read on that, too. A bad Christian, I mean, I would probably interpret that back to St. Paul, that we're all saints and sinners. But I still will hold to the fact that when someone says to me, yeah, I'm pro-abortion, and but I go to a Christian church confessing that Jesus Christ is my way, the truth, and the life, and he says, you will not murder, and the word you is singular in the Hebrew, I certainly would have to question. We all have to question whether or not we're living the life of Christ in this world. God constantly reminds us this, because we have the old sinful flesh. You will not murder. Remember this. Paul is very good at reminding us what we should do, what we shouldn't do, and how we are to live. Ultimately, I do agree that God will make the final judgment on all of this on Judgment Day, in terms of separating the wheat from the chaff.
Bob, we got to run. Thank you for the conversation. Hope you get better.
I hope so, too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Bob Weiss, Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, and that's our Ask the Pastor Hour.
.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.